Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 91, Rusted Wing. Tuesday, September 29th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode features the following segments: ever-expanding skill set, the front porch, chin wagon, and gratitude journal. I'd like to extend a special welcome to some folks who have introduced themselves on the welcome thread in Ravelry. Kansas Bell, Catherine from Kansas, welcome. Sanga, who is Alexandria from Sweden. Iri Biro, who is Isa from Portugal. Kay Ray, Carla, and host of the Relentless Knitting podcast. Chubby Pug Yarn, Emma from Norway. And Elise Deer, who is Elise from Seattle. Welcome to everyone, and thank you for introducing yourself on the Ravelry board. We are still a few short of 500 members in our Ravelry group, but when we get to 500 members, one person who has made a post in the introductions thread will receive a $25 gift certificate for Etsy. One of the exciting aspects of the back-to-school season is seeing the folks who have been participating in String Theory, the Knit and Crochet Club. We had a booth set up at the activity and club fair at school with lots of interactive opportunities. There was a lap loom, and some of the students took part in helping to create a woven object. We also had spinning. There was a big ball of red fiber, which is our school color, and that was generously donated by one of our fiber fairy godmothers, Chain of Fools, Emily of the Fiber Town podcast. And we had examples of knitting, crocheting, and weaving, and also some charity projects. And there were quite a few signups. So our club meetings will take place on Wednesdays after school this year. We meet starting in October through until the Christmas holidays. And then in the deep winter, we take a little bit of a break. I have some other projects that I do after school during that time. And then we pick up again in the spring. So hopefully we'll see some of those interested students show up at our meetings. But this year, I have the added excitement of using school time for a fiber arts seminar in each school. And today, I held my first session at one of the schools. I work in a 2 high school district, so nearly everything I do curriculum-wise in one building, I repeat in the other building with a different group of students. So today was session 1 for one of the schools. There were 5 students who expressed an interest in taking an approach that was deeper than just attending an after-school club. I led them to understand that this would be a more serious study We would be looking at fiber from different kinds of animals. They would try things that were unfamiliar to them. And they would also be leaders in a way to help teach others what they knew. And so 5 students came and we watched a video on handwork featuring Renate Hiller of the Fibercraft Studio. And we looked at some samples of fiber sent by another fiber fairy godmother, Sarah Hunt, of the Fiber Trek podcast. And students were charged with coming up with adjectives to describe the different types of fiber and differentiate them from one another. And we also did a little bit, not too much, we'll have to pick up on that another time, but we did a little bit of looking into what kind of sheep did this come from and what does the sheep look like. I also had samples of some other fiber that wasn't sheep fiber. So we had a camelid example of some alpaca. We had Angora rabbit. There was some silk and there was some cotton as well. So we talked about textiles being made from a wide range of fibers and that usually the textiles making up our clothing is a blend of certain kinds of fibers. So it was really informative and it worked really well to have the first half of the session be informative and very much curriculum-based, having a topic, talking about something, learning something new. And then the second part was much more hands-on. So there were some students who are already highly skilled spinners, and the ones who weren't were given a spindle, and we made some rolags with fun colors of fiber that they liked. They learned some basics of drop spindling on a top whorl spindle, and then I sent them on their way. So we'll see how they do when we have our next meeting in about 2 weeks. Ever expanding skill set. All the month of September, I have been working on ways to make my lunches healthier and more appealing by thinking more carefully about ingredients from my pantry and how I use them. And this weekend, I made homemade granola bars. I don't think I've made homemade granola since I was in high school. It's kind of embarrassing to say, but it's just not something that I've really thought about doing or anything I've thought about adding to my lunch. But I thought, well, hashtag Power Pantry is all about expanding your skill set. So I looked up a variety of different recipes and then I didn't really follow any of them. I used 2 cups of quick cooking oats, 1 cup of puffed millet, 2 cups of dried fruit and nuts, and that included some dried cranberries, dried pineapple, apricots, some coconut, sliced almonds, and then 1 cup of seeds. I had flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, and sunflower seeds. I added a little bit of salt, and then in a pan on the stovetop, I melted a few tablespoons of butter. I added quite a bit of almond butter and peanut butter and a little bit of honey and a little bit of maple syrup. That was the most difficult part, was figuring out what quantity of melted ingredients would be enough to hold all of the other ingredients together. I guess about 3/4 of a cup to a cup of those ingredients, but my bars turned out to be quite crunchy. So I may be rethinking that if I make them again, when I make them again. I lined a 13 by 9 inch glass baking dish with a piece of parchment, and then I put the entire mixture into the pan and pressed it down as firmly as I could. And I baked that in a 300 degree oven for about 45 minutes or so until it was browning. I let the granola bars cool completely before cutting them. They made a nice firm bar shape, very crunchy, as I said, but there was a lot of waste, I guess you could say, as I cut them. There were crumbly bits that were left over after cutting the granola bars, and I just scooped that into a tin, and Samuel's using it on his yogurt as just regular granola. So there's no loss, but I would like it to be that I cut up the granola bars and all of that mixture is in a bar, in the form of a bar. I've been taking them for my lunch this week and thinking about different combinations of ingredients to make more granola bars in the future. Coming up in the month of October for hashtag Power Pantry, we'll be taking a look at the cellar or root cellar. This is traditionally the time in the Northeast for the growing season to complete with digging up root crops and storing them for the winter. Things like potatoes, sweet potatoes, and other crops even like cabbages and Brussels sprouts, apples, things that can be stored in a cellar or root cellar. And I'm wondering, of course, if any Yarns at Yinhu listeners have a root cellar. It would be really exciting to hear about that or see photos. But what about those of us who don't? Do you have creative ways of storing things for cool storage when you don't have a root cellar? Or maybe you don't even have a basement at all. Some folks have refrigerators, perhaps, just for this purpose. Or maybe there are other creative solutions that you've come up with, and I would love to hear about them. Many folks comment that hashtag Power Pantry is one of their favorite parts of this program, not least because they get a lot of ideas from fellow listeners. So I hope you'll take the time to share photos, tips, suggestions, links on the Ravelry thread, because other folks are very interested in learning about the way you do things with your pantry. The front porch. Since I last recorded, I have begun and I've nearly completed a 3-color cashmere cowl. This is quite a popular pattern by Hohe Locatelli. And for this version of the cashmere cowl, I've knit one before with hand-spun yarn. For this version, I am using all scrap yarn. Some of it even has a bit of cashmere in the content. And again, I am taking some liberties with the pattern instructions. I'm completing all of the steps of the pattern, all parts of the pattern, but I'm not necessarily completing as many repeats as suggested, and I'm certainly swapping out colors of yarn more frequently than called for in the original. The color palette of this cashmere cowl is grays, greens, and some deep blues and purples with pops of orange and yellow. It's kind of surprising. It's not a typical palette for me, but I think it's a great combination of some yarn that I had left over. This pattern, as I've mentioned, is an excellent gift, and I think both of the cowls that I've knit so far may become gifts. At least I'll have them on hand as gifts for the holiday season. And I might even start another one of these cowls with additional scrap yarn in another color palette, because I think they're great purse knitting. You don't really have to think too hard about the pattern, and it comes together in a very pleasing way. So it could be some nice travel knitting for travel that I have coming up. On the front porch is also quite a bit of spinning for my sheep to shawl course. It's raining today, finally, but we have had a stretch of very clear, dry, and rather warm weather in September. And I've tried to soak up every moment that I can being outside and working on my porch. So I've hauled my spinning wheel out there and I've been working on spinning up all of the naturally dyed fiber that I have for my class. I'm not quite done, but when I am done with the spinning, I will have a big washing day, maybe one of the last warm, sunny days of fall. I'll have a big washing day and I will soak all of that hand-spun yarn. Some of it I think I have given a soak before, but I can't remember what I've done and what I haven't. I think maybe there's still a little bit of dye clinging to the yarn in some cases, and that really needs to be washed until the water runs clear. And I'll let that all dry, and then I can take stock in what I have and make more specific plans for my final knitted shawl or garment. On the way to work every day, I think over what my design might be like and change my mind about a dozen times during each commute. But I think that going through the process of thinking about what I would like to make and how all of these various weights and colors of yarn can come together into a cohesive whole, it starts to have greater and greater clarity every time I play through it in my mind. So I'll continue my commuter planning and, of course, keep Yarns at Yinhu listeners updated on my progress. Chinwagon, I am so pleased to spend some time this episode talking about my recent shawl design called Rusted Wing. Earlier this summer, I did quite a bit of dyeing with rust, and I became fascinated as I watched the patterns and the texture of rusted objects appear on the surface of the fabric. One of the downsides of dyeing with rust is that you can't rust dye with animal fibers. The fibers, the protein in the fibers deteriorates and it just doesn't work. You create a product that's falling apart. So I used cotton muslin as the basis for my rust dyeing. But all the while that I was completing these projects, I was thinking about a way to bring some of the magic and the interest and the texture of rust dyeing into a knitted project that I made with wool or wool blends. And slowly this began to take shape over the course of the summer. And that's often when I find I have the bandwidth to think about a pattern or design project and really devote a lot of time and attention to it. And so it began to take shape in a rather abstract way. It wasn't anything very literal, but Rusted Wing is a culmination of things that I was thinking about and toying with over the time when I was working with some rust dyeing. So the design, Rusted Wing, is for an asymmetrical shawl. It's quite a large shawl. It's knit with about 580 to 620 yards of fingering weight yarn in two colors. And I recommend not just two colors, but two different fiber components to the yarn. And colors and fibers as wildly diverse as you feel comfortable choosing them. This could be a great way to use some really wild skeins from your stash. The pattern that is pictured on Ravelry is knit with two different types of Quince and Company yarn. They're both fingering weight yarn, but they're quite different. Tern is a wool silk blend, and Finch is 100% wool. Some of my test knitters also experimented with holding a lace yarn double or choosing a yarn that's nearly a sport weight as one of the yarns. And the whole point of doing this is to really give the shawl a textural interest as well as a visual striping effect. The shawl is knit in stockinette and garter, so there's a striping effect. There is also a series of an increasing mesh panel that runs along one side of this asymmetrical shape or wing of the shawl. And so these panels or ridges of garter ridge and stockinette are horizontal as you knit them. But when you wear the shawl, since it's asymmetrical, the front is at a very dramatic slant so that you have the eye being drawn up and away off your shoulder, and you have the point of the shawl really drawing attention to a slim waist. So I think it's incredibly flattering as a design. And this is, like I said, a big shawl. It's substantial. So this isn't something that's just going to be a neckerchief. I was attracted to rusty colors, and I was also thinking of a fall palette. So the colors I chose in the Quince and Company yarn were Barnacle or the Tern, which is the wool silk blend. And Barnacle isn't really gray. It isn't really brown. It's a muted color, but it's a very beautiful color. And the dye is taken up differently by the wool and the silk. So it's not exactly heathered, but it has some visual interest. The Finch, the 100% wool yarn, I selected in Nasturtium, which is a vibrant, vibrant orange, a red-leaning orange, and the combination of the two is quite striking, and this will be a great addition to your fall wardrobe. The pattern is knit with U.S. size 6 needles. Depending on your gauge, you might use size 5 or size 7. And like I said, about 600 yards of fingering weight yarn. I have written the pattern with line by line instructions, including percentage complete information for those folks who really like to check off each row as they complete it. I think that's also a great pattern design for a beginning knitter or maybe someone knitting their first shawl. There aren't a lot of complicated stitches in this shawl. The textural interest comes a lot from the types of yarn that you select and also the contrast in colors. For those folks who feel a little bit tired or bored by line-by-line instructions, there is additionally a concise set of directions that has also percentage complete information, but every line isn't written out. It will say a set of directions, and it will say repeat this 7 times, for example, so that you have fewer pages to print and a more concise way to complete the pattern. So I tried to accommodate different types of knitters with my pattern instructions. The pattern has been released. It's available on Ravelry. And during the month of September, which isn't too much longer, It is available at a discounted rate. The rate will be $5 in October. And on the first day of October, October 1st, I will be hosting an Instagram contest. The winner will receive enough yarn to knit the pattern as pictured on the pattern page. So that's two skeins of Quince & Company Tern in the Barnacle colorway and one skein of Finch in Nasturtium. So the details will be on Instagram on October 1st for that giveaway. It's repost, use hashtag Rusted Wing and tag a friend for an entry. And in addition to Quince & Company yarn, this design would be wonderful, really wonderful, knit with some yarn from your stash. You could even think about using scraps for the garter stripes. And I also knit a version. It doesn't follow the pattern precisely, but I did link it on the pattern page because I wanted to provide an idea for how you might use one of those gradient sets in knitting this shawl design. And since the Super Summer Knit Together last summer, 2014, I had been staring at a gradient set from Fiber Optic in the steampunk colorway, which was deep browns and grays ranging to golds and oranges. And I had purchased a skein of solid pewter gray as well. So I knit this design, or something very close to this design, using that gradient set as well as the solid color. And I think this is a really great use of one of those gradient sets. They're so beautiful. They always draw me in. But then I really struggled thinking about what to do with that much yarn. And of course, there's a lot of joining necessary and things like that. So I think these garter ridge sections in Rusted Wing could really answer that dilemma for some knitters. Gratitude Journal. I'd like to extend a very special thank you to four lovely knitters who agreed to test knit Rusted Wing and who have provided ample feedback, details about their knitting progress, and also encouragement and enthusiasm about the pattern. So thank you, thank you, thank you to Out of This World, Kay Connors, Tia and Kat, and Polka Dot Knits. Their finished projects are beautiful, and they offer quite a bit of diversity in the colors of yarns and the textures of yarns that they've chosen. So I think by looking at their projects, you can get a really good idea of some of the variety that can be achieved with Rusted Wing. Thank you again so much to those ladies. And I hope that if you are thinking about knitting a fall shawl design and looking to add a bit of drama and interest to your wardrobe, that you will consider Rusted Wing.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, a bird out on a wire. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is So Wheat. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.